B-Pod Studios.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Welcome into the program, Felger and Maserati on a Reentry Monday. And Reentry Monday is presented to you by East Boston Savings Bank. That's where we're going to begin. We got Maz and Murray in our Town Fair Tire Studios in Dorchester. I am remote. Maz, what'd you make of Friday night and all the fallout?
Well, so look, as far as Friday night goes, I give the Bruins all the credit in the world for responding the way they did. The hit was dirty. He got a suspension. He deserved it. My initial feeling on the hit when I saw it was 10 games. 10. And in all honesty, this spilled over into Saturday because I was listening to Gasper and Murray. And I heard them talking about it. Murray, I think you said, and I'm criticizing you, but at one point I think you said he's going to get like a 4-game suspension or something like that on Saturday. And I remember my initial reaction was, oh, it's got to be steeper than that. It can't be 4. 4 is not enough. My gut was 10. He got 7, which is right in the middle of the two. So, and again, I'll admit my instinct was 10, probably based on a full season schedule. Like I'm thinking 82 games.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? So.
That is a 10 gamer.
Right? So I sort of, and then I thought about it. I said, well, it's not a full season. So if you go by percentage of the season, maybe. So I feel like overall they got it right. They basically got it right. And, I feel for Carlo. It feels like he's going to be out a little while. And I every time there's an injury like this, I have my doubts. When a guy leaves the ice, are they faking it? Are they dressing it up and not, I think all teams have a little bit of a history of doing that. But that was a dirty hit. I mean, dirty, dirty, dirty. No two ways about it.
Yeah, that the officiating crew didn't call anything at the time. And I'll get to that more on that. I know we will, too, in a second. That's why I thought maybe it won't be as much. Maybe he had more of a case to make, even though that was as dirty gets. And it was premeditated. He was definitely trying to hurt Carlo. So all that said, 7 games in the shortened season, probably about right. But the officials and their indifference on that hit at the time, like the league has to look at that. That to me is the most unbelievable thing. Of all the calls that could have been made, the most incorrect thing that could have happened was no call at all. I can't believe they didn't call anything.
I mean, especially when you add it on to Friday night. And I, we talked about it. When I say Friday night, I meant the game before.
Right,
Wednesday when Ovechkin speared freaking Frederick in the groin, and we were talking about it. It's like you're standing right there. I mean, I'm not often with Jack Edwards when he gets wound up on this stuff. But, Jimmy, Juve Edwards on Nesson on Friday night when this was going on, I mean, I felt the same way as Jack, and I can't say that very often. Go ahead.
This is Dean Morton and Pierre Lambert, who also reffed the game on Wednesday night, who saw Ovechkin spear Trent Frederick in the groin and assessed a 2-minute penalty for roughing. Roughing! Roughing! Right? And then Ovechkin gets fined $5,000, which is the maximum.
Okay, so not that I was like about to be fit for a straitjacket, which is what it sounded like with Jack, like a raving lunatic. But I did. I find myself saying, are you guys going to blow your whistle ever? I mean, what more do you need to see? Ovechkin clubbing Trent Frederick in the balls and Tom Wilson making a run at Carl like that. I mean, what are you looking at? And so I think that is obviously a fallout from this thing. Has there been any word on that? Has there been any reporting on that? Are those guys assigned games tonight? Do we know?
I haven't seen anything.
Me neither.
Yeah.
So, there's a couple different facets to it, and that is the punishment, which I do think fits the crime. I think the league, after the fact, got it right. And the officials on the ice got it wrong. I don't know. I feel like, good God, just do what you want out there. Oh, club people in the balls, take their heads off. Those guys aren't going to raise their arm. Like, what does it take? What's their threshold? My Lord. But the league got it right subsequently, and they didn't have to, Maz. The league didn't have to. There was enough there to say it was borderline. And in other words, he didn't hit his head first. He got sort of the outside of Carlo's, you know, shoulder, forearm, whatever. He sort of drew contact with that arm, shoulder area. And then even when he got in there, Wilson, I thought, made an effort to sort of get up onto the front shoulder and not just the head. So there was enough there. And you know, the league acknowledged that if he had gone in there a little lighter, that it, you know, it might have been a legal hit. In fact, you know, I broke out just this one little line from the player safety video. Jimmy, give me that number two, please, from the player safety video.
It is important to note that we agree with the Capitals' argument that at this point in the play, Wilson could deliver a hit on Carlo that does not result in supplemental discipline. We acknowledge their assertion that it is common for NHL players to legally deliver hits on unsuspecting or vulnerable opponents. While there are aspects of this hit that may skirt the line between suspendable and not suspendable, it is the totality of the circumstances that caused this play to merit supplemental discipline.
Okay, and then they go on to say the force. You know, they use the word force. And to me, I think they got it absolutely right. Because it wasn't your classic hit to the head because it didn't lead with head contact. And it you are allowed to contact a player along the boards like that. It's not like you're not allowed to touch the guy. You're allowed to touch the guy. It's just the league has made it clear in the last several years, you're not allowed to line guys up and drill them into the fifth row. Like, we're not doing that anymore, and that has been an obvious, I think, fairly consistent thing from the league now for several years. We are not, if you go in there, you've got to be mindful of that, of the player's safety, and we're not going to allow you just to tee off on guys up against the boards. And that, in layman's terms, Maz, is what Tom Wilson did. He teed off on Brandon Carlo, and it absolutely should have been thrown out of the game, absolutely should be suspended. They absolutely got it right.
Look, it's a different game now. I mean, it's a different game. You know, again, you want to go back 30 years when we were watching it or whatever, fine. Like, all kinds of crap happened. This guy's up against the board. He pinned his head in there and beat, and, you know, smashed his head into the boards. Like, to me, it was, you know, I thought he wedged him in there. He knew he had him, and he wedged him in there.
And he wanted it. He was sniffing it the whole shift.
He was hunting.
He was absolutely, he had the ass. You could just tell when a guy like that is looking for it and gets wound up. It was just a matter of time. Someone was going down. Someone was going down on Friday night. And unfortunately, it was Brandon Carlo. And you just knew Tom Wilson had that in his head. That's how he operates. And that was coming. He wanted it. And, you know, he got it. And what's amazing with him is, you know, there were aspects of it that were borderline, again, as the league pointed out. A lot of his hits are like that. A lot of them. You go back and look at his hits, the ones he's been suspended for, the ones he's been warned about or not suspended for. He is a master at just finding that right spot and, you know, still teeing off on, still getting the headshot, but having it just be enough shoulder contact or enough away from the boards, or just go back and look at it on YouTube, some of his hits. Like, he is a master at it. He is sneaky like that. But the league got it right. So that's one element to this, which we'll take your thoughts on, obviously, at 617-779-0985. The Bruins' response, which you guys both hit on, I thought was just tremendous.
Absolutely. It was great.
Go ahead, Miss.
Well, it's the kind of night, if you're a Bruins fan, that's a night to be proud of the way they answered it. All the way around. And I would include just about every guy on the roster, and I think I put this to you in an email. I was impressed by Bergeron because I just am not used to seeing Bergeron be assertive like that. And when I say assertive, I mean, I'm not saying that Bergeron's dropping the gloves, but, you know, skates over before the period, and Wilson and Ovechkin's obviously there, the two captains. And Bergeron says, you got to answer for that. Just letting you know, you got to answer for that. And then after the game, I thought Bergeron spoke rather candidly and bluntly. And this goes, and I also go back to the Ranger game where, you know, they've been playing badly. They give up 13 goals in two games. He comes out and drills someone in the opening shift. And then late in the game, that scene of him behind the net cross-checking whoever it was like four times. I mean, they were aggressive cross-checks. It feels to me like Bergeron has acknowledged that the captaincy comes with a certain responsibility that requires him to come out of his dignified manner every now and then. And then let alone the goals and the way they just peppered the Capitals. It was the kind of game that did it. It made you, if you're a Bruins fan, that game should have made you proud.
Yeah, I felt a tad corny talking about Bergeron specifically on Saturday morning, but I don't care because that was the balls. That's everything you want out of a leader in pro sports or just in life, that he had went and had words with them at the end of the period. And I loved that he went and tapped the penalty box in front of Tenorti after he gets into it with Wilson. Tenorti's been here, what, 2 games?
10 minutes.
2 games.
Yeah.
And he goes over and is like, good job. Love it. You know, like, you're one of us now. I again, sounds corny, but I was like, chills moment. That was the balls.
Whole thing, top to bottom. What a likable team. I just wish they were better.
Yeah, right.
You know, I wish they were better. I want them to win. I want them to win. I want Bergeron to win. I really like the team. I don't know how you could not feel just, you know, I mean, talk about a pitch-perfect response to that. From the physical response to the, you know, the way they laid it on the scoreboard, the way, you know, again, Bergeron, both those moments, having a word with them, just a word, you know, and it was before the second, Murray. I don't think it was after the first. It was before the second period.
Okay. Yeah, because Wilson was stretching, yeah.
Right, and then, you know, going over and acknowledging Tenorti, and Tenorti getting involved in the first place. It's
right.
Like, you know, because I remember, it's, you know, I remember saying to myself, well, who's going to answer? You know, obviously Frederick, but that... All right, so Frederick's, I'm going to see Frederick fight this guy again. I totally forgot about Tenorti. I just forgot. Like, oh, of course. And not that he's a huge fighter, but he's freaking 6'6". So you're the guy. And good for him. And good for Bergeron. And good for the team and the whole freaking thing the way around. That's a likable team. I like them. They get it. That response was just tremendous. And I don't know. I'd like to ignore last night. And some of the other stuff, but I guess you can't. I wish they were better. I wish they were better and that they, I don't know. I still think they have a chance. I think with the way they carry themselves and their attitude, it gives them a better chance. But I still wish they were a little bit better. And then you put it all together and there you are. And then you got a cup team. I don't know if they're good enough. But the attitude and the response and the way they carry themselves, boy, that was tremendous on Friday night. All right, so we'll take your calls on all of it, folks. 617-779-0985. To you right after this.
Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hey, it's Matt.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Felger Math.
What are you talking about?
Number one.
Tell us what we said, point A to point B, please.
Because they know how to build winning relationships.
No one keeps track of it, other than you. We don't, the listeners don't, they have no idea what you're talking about.
Felger Math.
Oh, I think he's a tool bag.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Near corner, Carlo.
Oh.
Wilson
oh.
Going for the big hit. He just drilled Carlo up high, and Carlo is down.
He got him in the head, and he came a long way to do it. Carlo turns to make this play, and Wilson... I mean, he drove his head into the glass.
We got nobody in the penalty boxes. No hit to the head. No penalty at all. There's your threshold, folks. Skate 20 feet and hit a guy 6'5 in the head against the glass.
You know, that was a bull hit. Brando had his head down in the corner, and, you know, he took a liberty on a guy that was in a vulnerable spot. So that's a cheap shot there, and you know he was obviously in a bad spot, and he's hurting, so that's a bad hit.
Now it's going to be Wilson dropping him with Tenorti. Tenorti fires the right. Wilson with a couple of jersey jabs. Tenorti a right. Tenorti another right hand. Wilson a right that duck. Wilson's lost his helmet. Wilson a right, and now the linesman will step in. Off the draw, you got Frederick and Wilson jabbing at one another. Frederick with a couple of jersey jabs. Getting Frederick with lefts. Frederick a right. Frederick a right that missed. Wilson goes down. Frederick a right, and the linesman will grab a hold.
Clearly looked like to me got him right in the head. Defenseless player. Predatory hit from a player that's done that before.
His feet were on the ice. He stayed down with everything. Just looked like a hard hit in the corner. I'm not exactly sure what happened, but to me it looked like just a hit.
The Department of Player Safety has suspended Tom Wilson for 7 games.
All right, there are some of the details from Friday night. Peter LaViolette, I want to get to in a little bit. That was him after the game. That last voice you heard before the player safety video was Peter LaViolette. We'll get to him coming up, but I promised your calls, so let's do it. Mike in Providence, lead us off. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, guys. Happy Monday. Friday night was unbelievable. Probably the best, you know, emotional and proud moment to be a Bruins fan this year anyway. You know, the way they responded to Carlo, I thought was great. Tenorti, you know, I don't really care for the play, but, you know, if he'll drop him in a response to something like that, we'll take him. You know, as good as they make you feel one night, you want to pull your freaking hair out the next. I mean, they had an opportunity to get another quick two, you know, last night, and they can't beat a team that's lost five in a row. I mean, where do you guys put them right now? Honestly, like if the season ended today, where do you guys, how far do you think?
They're in the mix. I don't have them favored over much. They could lose any series. They could lose any series in this division, win any series in this division. They're right in the mix. I don't think they're head and tails better than a lot of their competition. I think they're better than most, but not a lot better and not as good as some. I still don't think like you're better than the Capitals now. You know, I don't feel that way at all. I feel you had a great response to an emotional event and on the, you know, with the wind at your sails there from that emotion, you pulverized the Caps. But I still think roster to roster, they're probably a little bit better than you. So that's what I think. And I said this last week. I'll say it again. Look at the standings. The playoffs are not an automatic. They're just not. They should be, but they're not. It's the way it works this year with all this interdivision play. It's really tightly bunched. There's just so many games against each other. It's going to be hard to separate. If you don't take care of business against some of these bad teams, it's going to catch up to you and you'll miss the playoffs altogether. I like this Bruins team. I think they're good, Maz. I think they have a chance. I also think there's a chance they miss the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, look, again, it's a unique setup and they're in a tough division. And look, last night drove me bananas too. It did. But if you were to say to me, which game are they more like? I mean, I'm not telling you they're beating Washington because I don't think they are. I don't think they're as bad as they played last night. I don't. And I think, you know, my guess is the two things are probably related. And I was that game last night sucked. And you know what I found on multiple levels? And you know what I found myself saying? Can we play Washington again? I want to play Washington. I don't want to watch this game. So, and I wonder if maybe they had the same letdown. After those two games with the Caps and the Devils come in and you went to sleep. So I'm not saying I'm giving them a pass on it because I'm not giving them a pass. You cost yourself 2 points.
No, that was a dud. And those Devils goalies have been annoyingly good against them, too. I thought it was the other one for most of the night, Blackwood, but it was Wedgwood. But they've both been good against the Bruins.
That guy last night's got a good glove hand, man. He can catch the puck. Anyway.
You're Dave in Plymouth. Go ahead, Dave.
So did you guys catch the Tampa-Chicago game yesterday?
No.
So Connor Murphy launched into Eric Chernak behind the net. Wasn't exactly the same, but he got a match. He got kicked out, and they immediately, the announcer said, it's going to be Rule 48. And my whole thing is these officials have to be sat down, and they just have to start enforcing this nonsense. I mean, it's not just Wilson. It's other guys who are doing this, too. I think it's becoming a problem in the league. Wilson is just, you know, the poster boy for this because he keeps getting in trouble. And I'm not convinced he's going to come back from the seven games and he's going to be a choir boy. I think he's going to pick up right where he left off because that's his game. That's his M.O.
Well, these guys do turn a corner. They tend to. I mean, Marchand's calmed it down. He's figured it out. And this Wilson did go a year and a half since he had anything. And Matt Cook settled it down for a little bit. There was one more. What's the freaking guy's name? Rafi Torres? Is that right?
Yeah, Rafi Torres, right.
Yeah, like, so there's a handful of these guys that just, you know, they get into this way and they can't help themselves. It's like that freaking Duke basketball player who kept tripping people.
Yeah, Grayson Allen.
Grayson Allen, like, it's like a tick. They can't help themselves. And then some of them, not all of them, but some sort of figure it out and they grow up and they level out and who knows, they get medicated or something. And so I'm not sure about Tom Wilson. I've seen guys cut the crap. He could cut the crap when he comes back. Dave said this, it's a problem across the league. Am I crazy to say that? I don't really feel that.
Oh, I don't feel that either. No, look, again, I mean, it just happened. It'd been a while since it was a really bad one in a Bruins game.
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember the last one. Like, I you know, it's been a while. I think it's almost gone to a point where I don't think there's enough hitting in the game anymore. But that aside, let's stick to the topic, which is that, you know, there was a bad hit and the refs blew it. End of story.
Absolutely.
They completely blew it. But I'll tell you what, given the alternatives, having the refs call the penalty and the Bruins do nothing, or the Bruins take care of it and the refs do nothing, I'll take B.
It's probably a better result in terms of that.
Hell yeah.
I mean, it sucks that Carlo's a big loss.
He is.
They've lost enough guys on D. He you know, certainly ain't Bobby Orr, but he's a steady guy back there. And a team that I think could take all the size it can take, he brings that to you, and you're going to – so, like, that blows. Like, there's nothing good about that. But the response does tell you something about the team. But back to the whole thing about this, there's a problem in the game and this has got to stop. I think they've done a decent, not perfect, but a representative job of cutting back on it. I don't see it as much in the game as I used to. I don't feel like there are as many suspensions as there used to be. I don't feel there are as many guys out there. Like, there was a time when it was Matt Cook and Rafi Tor, and there was a bunch of these guys. Now there's only feels like it's down to a couple, if any. And so I don't think it's a problem in the league.
So, Mike, when you say they've done a decent job, you mean the league or the players?
Well, probably in cahoots.
Yeah.
But the league did a good job with this. The league didn't do anything wrong here. Like, I know it's default here in Boston because you just want to cry about Goodell because Brady was cheating. But so you're like, oh, the commissioner doesn't get it. Like, just relax. The league did the right thing. 7 games in a 56-game season is a substantial penalty for a hit that, I'm sorry, was illegal and deserved it, but had some borderline elements to it. The league didn't have to come down with 7 games. The league could have gotten away with a couple, but no, they came down heavy on Tom Wilson. So make no mistake, it's not like he got a slap on the wrist or anything.
Yeah, no, the suspension's right, but there is precedent here, Mike, that not too long ago in a big game where the refs miss a call. The Barbashev hit on Johansson in Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final a couple of years ago. He was ultimately suspended, a game for it? But they didn't call anything on the ice at the time.
Okay, so refs miss calls.
Mike, I'll tell you, if you do the math, it comes out exactly the same almost. I mean, 10 games over 80 is 1/8. 7 over 56 is 1/8. So they got him for an eighth of the season. I mean, that's why my instinct was 10, but in a 56-game schedule, 7's right.
And Murray, for a guy to get suspended in a Stanley Cup final, that's not a small deal. So, but maybe you raise a point about the on-ice officials aren't in lockstep with the league. The league's serious about it. They've handed down games, you know, but the refs on the ice are not as diligent. Which, you know, frankly, now that I'm just talking it out and thinking about it, I'm actually fine with 2. I'd rather the guys on the ice, I mean, they should have called this. I'm not telling you that the refs were right on for, they should have called this on Friday night. But I'd rather the on-ice officials have a lower threshold and then let the league take care of it.
Lower threshold's one thing, but missing something this blatant is another.
It's bad. Bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, if I'm going to have the ref err on either side of it, I'd rather have him err on that side of it than we're going to start throwing guys off the ice for breathing on people. Like, we get into this thing where we're watching NFL games and quarterbacks are getting breathed on and there's, you know, you know what I mean? Like, I think the on-field officials in the NFL err way too far on the other side and it ruins the product. So, like, I mean, I don't mean to defend the officials, but I just disagree with this thing. Like, it's a problem in the game and they've got, I think that problem has gone down. I think there's fewer hits like this across the league on a game-by-game basis. And I think the players are better about it, Maz. I think the league's better about it. Maybe the officials are last to come around. Maybe that's fair.
Yeah, I think the players have overall adapted quite well. I mean, they show more respect for each other, which they should. You're talking, you know, let's not forget, remember Bergeron had major problems early in his career or earlier. Like, you know, he hasn't had an issue for a long, long time now. So it feels like players have, you know, knock on wood, it feels like players have come around on that.
Here's an update from Big Jim Murray. More of your thoughts on the Bruins from Friday night and over the weekend. We'll slip in a Red Sox minute as well. A little bit of a war on nerd situation coming up as well, so don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mass.
I'm just going to ramble and rant for 15 minutes if you let me. I'm not joking.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I ask him, are you healthy? He's like, yeah. And that's what it all matters right now. Obviously, we have to make adjustments. But we're getting to know the individual. And obviously, it's a different delivery. A few things that Bushy has noticed, you know, in the two outings in the bullpen. So it's just a matter of keep working hard. But, you know, overall, we're good with the stuff. Obviously, he doesn't like the walks. We don't like the walks. Just keep building and getting ready for opening week.
All right, that's Red Sox manager Alex Cora talking about Garrett Richards. Your biggest offseason acquisition. Number three starter pegged into the rotation this year. Again, $10 million 1 year. He was your biggest offseason move. And so far in spring training, he has sucked. Maz, your thoughts?
Well, it's almost a dollar per walk at this rate. He's pitched two games. The guy can't throw an effing strike. This is the most worrisome part of the whole thing. I told you, I watched his first outing last week, and it was ball, ball, hit. Ball, 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 walk. Ball, hit. He either throws the ball over the plate and gets hit, or he throws a ball and puts a guy on. Four innings, six walks, six runs, ERA of 13.5 so far for Garrett Richards. Oh, did I mention? Yesterday he faced Charlie Morton, who is also a free agent, signed with the Atlanta Braves. Three scoreless. Meanwhile, last week, Corey Kluber of the New York Yankees, in whom the Red Sox also had an interest and wanted to play in Boston. He signed with New York for 1 year and $11 million. Two innings, three strikeouts, no runs. So, look, you know, this to me, now look, Morton, I wonder about the Red Sox at the time said they made a competitive offer on Charlie Morton. Now, I want to know what competitive is. I think Morton got 1 year and $15 million from the Braves. And if I'm the Red Sox and I have to prevent him from going to a team like Atlanta, who's a contender, then I offer him 1 year and 20. I don't care. This is what you're going to have to do now to get players. So Morton didn't come here either because the Red Sox didn't pay enough or because they're not good enough, both of which are an indictment on the ball club. And in the case of Kluber, I would say the same thing. He went to the Yankees for 11. So you either have to overpay or you're not going to get these guys. They didn't get either. If this guy sucks, Bloom's going to look like a clown. I mean, you know, so again, it's spring training, so you know, I'm willing to let it go for a little bit. But if this guy blows, oh boy, what a kick in the face that is.
Well, so here's my war on nerds, reading Pete Abraham. Not that he's, you know, at war with Pete A, but he, you know, he just put the thought in my head because he lays this out pretty well. Morton, who's 37, he's 4 years older than Richards, okay? Morton, at 37, he is 33-11 with a 3.24 the last three seasons with 72 starts. Okay, now these are not advanced analytics. The last three seasons, 72 starts, 33-11, 3.24.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Richards, in the last three seasons, 29 starts, because of all the injuries, he can't stay healthy, 7-7 with a 4.09. You tell me, Maz. Over the last 3 years, someone's able to make 72 starts, win 33 games, and post a 3.24 ERA versus a guy who can only make 29 starts, is a 500 pitcher at 7-7, and an ERA of over 4. Who would you go with?
Morton.
However, as Pete Abrights, representing the Red Sox views, pitch data suggests he has all the tools required to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, again, the Red Sox place their bet on potential. Richards, who turns 33 in May, so he might even be older than, you know, younger than 4 years, more than 4 years younger. Anyway, is healthy after a career of battling injuries, and pitch data suggests he has all the tools required to be successful. What pitch data might Pete be referring to there, Mass?
Spin rate.
So he can spin it. He can spin it right into the dirt or right in the middle of someone's bat.
Yeah,
but
wait.
Boy, it spins like a mother.
Wait till they see. Wait till come July when they have a staff ERA of 5.5. Wait to see how fast Alex Cora's head is spinning.
It's like, I love it. Pitch data. What's wrong with the pitch data that you gave me a couple paragraphs before? 7-7 with a 4.09 ERA over 3 years in which he was only able to make 29 starts. I consider that pitch data. I liked Morton's pitch data. 72 starts, 33-11, 3.24. That sounds like good pitch data to me. What does it matter how the ball spins if you're able to get out there every 5 days and win three out of your four starts with a 3.24 ERA? I don't care how the ball spins. I care about the results. But this is the day and age we're in, Maz.
And look, you know what?
Do you think the Red Sox went with Richards over Morton because of spin rate or because he was $5 million cheaper?
B. I do. I think that they looked at it and said, well, you know, all things considered, we're better off going with Richards for 1 year and 10 than with Morton for 1 and 15. I mean, I shouldn't say that because they went after Morton first. Okay, so they went after Morton first. So, but the point is, they're not going to get Morton for 1 and 15 if other teams are also offering something similar because they're not good anymore. So, in some ways, it's almost like what the Patriots are going to face. You're going to have to offer more to get them. And they didn't. So, they went after Morton first. I'll give them that one. I do worry, though, about putting too much into this data because what they would tell you is, you know, injuries are not predictive. You know what I mean? In other words,
A
guy's been hurt doesn't mean he's going to get hurt again. So there's good value in the 1 year at $10 million. Well, I would tell you that I'll take the guy that's durable.
Well, and the nerd would also tell you that he shouldn't be getting hit like he's getting hit because the ball spins so much. It's that that's a fluke. There's something about the batted balls in play that's going to even out over time. So the nerd would also tell you that Richard's other numbers aren't predictive because his spin rate's so good. I'm sorry, Matt. I disagree with you. I mean, I think they looked at it and said, this guy's got a better spin rate, and we can get him for $5 million less? No brainer. We might want the guy with the spin rate if they're equal money. I mean, he is 4-plus years younger. So, I don't know. I mean, the money's just, like I sort of tie it together. Like, that's how Bloom has been, you know, that's how Bloom had to build it in Tampa.
He was conditioned that way, right.
You know, right? So we have to take the guy that's cheaper, and so let's try and find some advanced metrics that would give us some hidden value on the guy. And, you know, I'm telling you, I think if they were equal, they'd take the guy with the greater spin rate because they think he would have a better chance of success, and they throw all the actual results out the window, which the nerd tends to do.
Yeah, so look, again, I mean, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on Morton. You don't have to, but I'll give him the benefit of the doubt because they went after him first. But it does bring up a question about Bloom that I still have and will have, which is, okay, so Morton was one of the better free agents, at least in your market, at the beginning. You weren't going to sign Trevor Bauer and give him what the Dodgers gave him, so you went after Morton. Fine. You're going to have to extend for that guy. And what's the biggest free agent that Bloom's ever signed? Like in Tampa or here, whether he was assistant, like, is this, you know, because Tampa doesn't typically go after those guys. So you're going to extend to get them. It's one of the concerns I do have about Bloom. Can he go get a big fish? And, you know, this is something over time that I think bears watching.
All right. You can add this to the list of topics. We'll get to your calls on everything. We've got calls on the board from different stuff over the weekend because it is a reentry Monday. I have a quick bone to pick with a couple of things that were said in the wake of Friday night's hit on Brandon Carlo. And then your calls, I promise. Long commercial-free segment is next.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming anywhere you go, Sports Hub app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Sometimes because you agree.
I agree with Matt.
And sometimes because deep down you like the pain.
Pulling each other's shirts off and licking each other's faces.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
you know, that was a bull hit. Brando had his head down in the corner, and, you know, he took a liberty on a guy that was in a vulnerable spot. So that's a cheap shot there. And, you know, we lost a great player. And you know, it is great to see him skate off the ice by himself. But, you know, he was obviously in a bad spot, and he's hurting. So that's a bad hit.
Just a few little bones to pick, things that were said in the wake of Friday night. That was the first, Brad Marchand, between periods Friday night. He's obviously right with what he said. He was obviously part of that great Bruins response. And I think he himself has settled down and turned into a really good pro and a really, you know, guy that's worth rooting for on this team and all of that. However, I would still say, let's not go too far, Marchmont. Let's not, you know, I don't know if you're the guy to be taking the moral high ground on this stuff. I mean, you've concussed Marcus Johansson. You slew-footed Sammy Salo. I could go through the whole rap sheet. But you had a nice run. I don't want to say nice run. You had a pretty hefty run through your career where you were running around hurting people too. So you used to be that guy. And let's hope it's all in the past with you. But that's not the first guy I would pick to be throwing stones. You know what I mean? But he is a veteran. He's a leadership position. He was part of the response. So, like, I get it. I'm not going to, you know, bury the guy for it. I would just say, like, let's just remember where you came from, and before Bruins fans, you know, separate their shoulders, patting him on the back, let's just remember who he is and where he came from and some of his past as well.
No, it's a good point. I'll tell you, I think he was reflective, though, Mike, of the overall, I don't want to say frustration, so it's anger. Anger that was coming out of the locker room. How often do you see a guy swear on the Nesson interview?
And it was, so I missed it at the time. That was between periods, huh?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And so it just, let alone drop an F-bomb in there.
He dropped the F-bomb there, yeah.
Like, so I just thought, you know, typically with the, you know, with the local rights holders especially, not to mention the national ones, but you never see that. Never. And I thought it was authentic. So, or at least it was said for a reason. How about that? Maybe it was a little premeditated, but they were angry, and I think they had a right to be.
Yeah, well, you know, I think he represented how they felt and then how they came out and played. And all of that was, I thought, positive for the Bruins. The second thing I had a much bigger problem with, it's Peter Laviolette, the Capitals coach. Now, Friday night you heard the sound on Jimmy's montage at 2:20 there, where he spoke after the game on Friday night about how he didn't leave his skates. It felt like a clean hit, like they got it right on the ice. And I let that go because maybe he hadn't seen all the replays. It had just happened. It was a post-game interview. He's got to lobby the league and hope he's not suspended. And so, okay, you know, heat of the battle, night of, whatever. You got to protect your team. I got it, Peter. The next day, he doubled down. And I thought, took it too far. And here's Peter Laviolette. Now, it was still before the suspension. So he's still lobbying for his player. But there's a line between supporting your player, lobbying for your player, and doing what's bad for the game. And I think Peter Laviolette crossed that line with his comments on Saturday. Jimmy, just give me the cut.
I mean, to me, it was a hockey hit. If this is a suspendable play, then all hitting really is going to probably have to be removed because he didn't take any strides. He didn't target the head. The player was up against the boards. He was upright, and Tom hit him hard. And I hope the player's okay. But for me, the call, I think, was correct on the ice last night. And this hit happens so many times through the course of the game where somebody hits somebody against the boards.
Okay, so when he says, if this is suspendable, then all hitting will have to be removed, it's just a dick comment. It's just a baby comment.
Like, it's just straight up stupid. That he doubled down on the stupidity is kind of blew my mind. Like you said, like in the heat of the moment, it happened fast. Maybe he didn't see it. You got to protect your players and stick up for them. That part I get on Friday night. That he did this the next day, he's just a moron.
But it's like, yeah, it's like that guy that says, well, just put a skirt on him then.
Yeah.
We wanted to wear flags. Like, oh, stop being such a hard, ooh, like, well, let's just take all hitting out of the game then. Stop being such a baby. It's a dick thing to say, and it crossed the line from supporting your player, which he has to do, and I don't expect him to bury Tom Wilson. I don't expect him to bury his player, but there is something of this. You are all in it together. And Bergeron said it the best after the game. He said, it's up to us. Like, you know, the league can do whatever it wants. The refs can do whatever it wants. But if we're going to run around trying to hurt each other like this, then it's not going to work. It's ultimately so. And I put the coaches in on that, too. They're all sort of in on it together to keep each other safe. Because you could hit a guy like that 20 times a night if you wanted to. And so it's up to the players to condemn it among themselves. And I would expect the coaches to be a part of that. So he doesn't have to bury Tom Wilson or condemn Tom Wilson, but to say, well, then just take all hitting out of the game. Ah, oh, stuff it, Peter. Like, come on, that to me crossed a line.
Yeah, he went too far with it. I mean, and I'm not surprised, but because my recollection is, and I don't remember everything that was said either, Mike. You have a better memory than I do when it comes to this stuff. But like in some of the Marchand stuff, I got the sense that the Bruins weren't crazy about it. You know, and there were times they said he doesn't need to play a certain way anymore. He's a highly skilled player. Like, it felt to me they were trying to tug him out of there. And this, to me, only reinforces Wilson's behavior. Although, I don't know what Laviolette's saying behind the scenes, right? Because maybe this was done for the whole suspension aspect of it. Who the hell knows? But it's a bad look. That's a bad look.
I mean, is it a worse game if they take that hit out of the game?
No.
No. No. And there's plenty of good hard checking. I mean, and not as enough and not as much as there used to be, granted. But you can take that out of the game and still have a good physical product and a good intense product. You don't need that hit. Like, they're right to take that hit out of the game. And Laviolette knows it's a different league. You can't do that anymore. There was a time when, you know, players were expected to play through concussions. You got your bell rung. Go back out there. That's the way it worked. Now it doesn't work that way anymore. It's a new world. Okay, the doctors, the lawyers, everyone's conscious. Everyone knows what's going on. Everyone knows the long-term effects of brain injuries and head injuries. That those days are over. A guy gets his bell rung, he's out. So you can't have that in the game. You can't have Wilson flying into the corner of the boards with someone's heads up against the boards with the force with which he did that. You can't. It's not going to work. You won't have a league. Players are going to be going out, Peter, and you know it. So drop that, ooh, we just got to give up hitting altogether nonsense. That's a bull crap.
Well, he knows it, too, because, again, just go back two nights earlier. I mean, that game was, you couldn't find an inch of ice in that game. It was so tightly contested. And there was nobody, I don't remember anyone getting concussed in that game. I mean, you can still hit in the league. Let's not get stupid about it.
All right, I promise. Right to your phones after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task. But after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.